Today is Thursday, September 24th, 2020. It's 1:37 in the afternoon. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, the weekly podcast we record via Zoom. I'm in the studios of WGN Radio in Chicago, and you can hear my radio show weekdays from 9 to noon.
I'm Heather Sharon with WTTW News.
I'm Eric Zorn, the demoted columnist from the Tribune. I was the host of The Mincing Rascals last week, but then John came back, and I had to yield the throne. Although I was going to pull a Donald Trump and just refuse to go. It didn't work. It didn't work for me. Welcome back, John.
Thank you all. I saw the numbers and the ratings were really good for last week's Rascals podcast.
Sure they were.
Actually, you know, it's been very frustrating for a lot of the Mincing Rascals listeners to capture this podcast because of some technical problems we have had corporate-wide. WGN Radio is now owned by this larger company with hundreds of TV stations across the country, and our problem uploading the podcast was shared across the station, across the platforms. It wasn't just the Mincing Rascals. I have been told that this is now available on iTunes and all the platforms you get it on, and that the problem has been fixed. It's always available at WGNradio.com on our podcast page, but we know you all like to have it pop up in your phone, and hopefully that has been rectified. So that's the good news. The bad news is Steve Bertrand will no longer be on the Mincing Rascals.
Is he going to come back and say goodbye to us? Or
nah, he's dead
he's
to me now.
He's moved on to the big time.
Wow, he's ghosting us is what you're saying.
Well, actually, he's not at all. I know he'd love to be here, and it's killing me that he's not, both on the podcast and on my radio show. But he now has a 4-7 news show at WGN Radio, and so the decision about him not being on the podcast is a little editorial. Company doesn't want him expressing a lot of opinions as a newsman. Heather, you can relate to that a little bit.
I do, yeah.
And the scheduling doesn't work out either. So enjoy Steve Bertrand weekdays from 4 to 7 on WGN Radio. One of my listeners today told me that he just voted in DeKalb County. Ballots go out today. Still, the scroll on CNN is Trump refuses to commit to peaceful transition of power. Now, maybe that's just political posturing, guys. All candidates say when I win the election, not if. So to ask the incumbent about a peaceful transition assumes that he's going to lose, and there's no upside for him to talk about that right now. His casting doubt on the election process, the voting and the counting is worrisome, sure. There will be court fights, certainly. In fact, there's a couple hundred cases in the courts nationwide right now about the 2020 process. I'm worried about that, but I'm not worried that once it's all sorted out, he won't step aside. He won't want to, but he'll have to. A 1 to 10, how naive do I sound there, Eric?
8. I mean, the thing is, yes, you don't, as a political candidate, you don't want to say, you never want to say that you're going to lose. But try to imagine Donald Trump going onto a stage and saying, the people have spoken. I have called Joe Biden and congratulated him on his victory. We will work with him in the transition for a smooth transition for the American people. Can you imagine in a million years Donald Trump saying something like that?
No.
What he has been saying is that if he loses, and he said this several times now, if I lose, it will be a hoax or a fraud. And so he's just laid the groundwork to declare the results of the election, no matter what they are. Unless he wins, which case they'll be totally valid. But if he loses, he'll be able to say that they were invalid. And there are all kinds of nightmare scenarios out there. A recent piece in The Atlantic talks about an effort on the statewide level for red states to get their electors to all agree to support Trump, no matter how the state goes. If the state is controlled by a Republican legislature, then they'll try to get the electors or the Electoral College to go and vote for Trump, even if Biden wins the state. Now, I think that might be legal. It probably is legal given the way the whole Electoral College is set up. But I think you would see some extreme anger on the part of the public if that would happen. So,
how about you, Heather?
Well, I would just cast your memories back all the way to 2016 in the months leading up to the 2016 election. He said something very similar. He said that the only way I could lose is if it's rigged. He again declined to sort of say that he would accept whatever the results were. And of course, this was in a time when pretty much everybody thought he was destined to lose to Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, he didn't. But let's not forget that since his earliest days in office, Donald Trump has asserted without evidence, without any factual basis, that he actually won the popular vote instead of Hillary Clinton, and that there were somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 million illegal votes. And I can't emphasize enough at how not true that is. So if we are surprised, and I have to say I was surprised hearing a president behind the seal of the presidency say that last night, we shouldn't be, because this is of a piece that he has said before. The difference is, of course, is that he is now president, and at least until 11:59 a.m. on January 21st, he can wield that authority. And honestly, we've never had a president who hasn't at least felt the pressure to make vaguely worded mouth noises about the importance of the peaceful transfer of power. And that, I think, has left everybody sort of in this weird limbo where some people are saying, wait, you're overreacting. There's plenty of institutional checks and balances. And you have other people saying, what we've seen over and over again, institutional checks and balances sort of fail.
Well,
and that leaves us in a very frightening position, I think.
Well, I'm a little surprised at how surprised you guys are. That's the way this guy talks. Like, I'm worried about the Supreme Court being the decider, or some of the shenanigans at the polling places and things like that. But once it is determined that he's lost, I mean, literally walk me through the scenario. Is he going to duct tape himself to a chair? Is he going to call out the army? And to whom would the army respond?
I mean, I think that the scenario outlined in Barton Gellman's Atlantic piece that Eric mentioned is that somehow so the way that it technically works is that you don't vote for president. You vote for electors who vote for president. And those electors have to be sent to the Electoral College by state legislators. So that raises the at least possibility that a Republican-controlled legislature, like the one in Pennsylvania, could choose, instead of sending electors pledged to support Joe Biden, they could choose to send electors pledged to support Donald Trump, regardless of what the state vote is.
And they would do that by saying that we believe that this vote is fraudulent, and that sending Trump electors to the election, I mean, I don't think they literally go, or they probably won't in a pandemic, but appointing Republican electors is in line with the will of the people of Pennsylvania, as we judge it, because we think all these mail-in ballots for Joe Biden are fraudulent. And it would be astounding and outrageous, but I put nothing past them.
Remember in the run-up to the 2016 election, there was a lot of sort of conspiratorial talk along these lines about them denying Donald Trump the nomination and that they would insert somebody else. And there were all sorts of last minute 11th hour moves. We wondered if those were going to happen, and they didn't. It's the reverse, but this feels a little like that to me. Yeah, there's a lot of ways, all of the things you guys are talking about could happen, but I think you're asking for a lot.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt that this is, a worst case, low single digit probability type
Thank
event
you.
Here. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think the issue is that when you talk to sort of statisticians and people who are far more conversant with probabilities, is that you want to focus on two things. You want to focus on outcomes that have a very high probability, and you want to focus on things that have relatively low probability, but that would have catastrophic effects. So I think of it as the Chernobyl theory, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
in sort of, if you had sort of gauged the probability of a complete and total nuclear reactor meltdown, it would have been a very low probability. But the fact of the matter is that it wasn't zero. And the impact of that catastrophe was so great that it warranted more attention on that very low probability.
I see that point. That's a nice analogy. But then are you also a little encouraged, Heather, that Mitch McConnell today said there will be a peaceful transition of power? He's not the only one, not the only Republican senator to say stuff like that.
Sure. I think it's noteworthy that Mitch McConnell, who has typically responded to Donald Trump's more out there statements and tweets as saying, I didn't hear it, or I didn't see it, or I'm sorry, I'm very busy talking on this phone, which is not actually connected to another human being. So I think that's notable. However, I would also say that Mitch McConnell has made it clear that he sees the ultimate, you know, seizure of power and consolidation of power as his ultimate goal, as we've seen in the Supreme Court wrangling. So you sort of have to take it with a grain of salt, perhaps.
Maybe so. I'll tell you, if you wanted to get scared about something, the New Yorker piece by Jeffrey Toobin about the way this could play out was, I think, more instructive and more probable. For instance, he says that, what is it, about 69% of Democrats say they plan to vote by mail and about 19% of Republicans do. The point being that the vote totals that you'll have on the night of the election could show Donald Trump with 400 electoral votes. But now they're going to be counting ballots the day after the election, and they've got 2 weeks to do that. And so within a few days, it could flip-flop. And in 2 weeks, it could be a significant win for Joe Biden. I can just see them saying, see, I told you so.
So I think there are two parts of that. One, there was a recent poll that showed that somewhere in the neighborhood, 60% of Americans now understand that there is a very good probability that we won't know who won on the night of November 3rd. So I think people have gotten the message that it's going to take longer to count. Three states that are really crucial, Florida, Arizona, and Minnesota, count early voting and mail-in ballots before election day. So as they count, as they come in, So they count very, very fast. And if Donald Trump loses Florida and loses Pennsylvania and loses Minnesota, there's practically no path to 270 electoral votes for him. I think if you have that situation, you're going to see people like the AP and CNN call the race simply by saying, look, the math doesn't work any other way. But it's definitely going to be an election night like we've never seen before.
It's going to be really important for news outlets, electronic news outlets, and also print, because we're all, you know, doing immediate stuff, to remind people of the votes, not of the percent of precincts that are reported, but of the percentage of the projected overall vote that's in. Because what can happen is when you have a lot of mail-in ballots, you can say, well, we have, 90% of precincts are reporting, but there may still be another, 40% of the vote still out, and maybe heavily mail-in, and mail-in ballots this time are supposed to be heavily Democratic. So I think it's going to be really important for the responsible mainstream media, the WGNs, the Tribunes, the WTTWs, and so on, to be sure that they are telling the public what the results say and what they don't say, and not try to give these numbers that could easily be misleading. Because I think what Toobin is talking about is really possible, that you're going to have Trump running out and declaring victory. And it's kind of like what Attorney General Barr did with the Mueller report, which is he got a hold of that narrative before Mueller himself did. He had the Mueller report. He issued his, what was it, a 5-page summary or something like that of the report. And that ended up being the narrative that the people ended up believing. It was the first story out there. So getting control of this narrative is going to be really important. And, Heather's right. It's going to be like no election we've ever seen, unless it happens to be, a landslide of Reagan over Mondale kind of proportions, in which case we can all go to bed early.
I'd like to see the Fox Newses of the world. Drudge doesn't seem to be much of a player these days, but I don't know, Rush Limbaugh, somebody say what you guys just said. Election night is not the night. The votes will be counted in time. I don't know that their image, if we all think we understand that, I think we're fools if we think everybody else does. Not because we're super smart, but because I don't think we're acolytes of Fox News. That's the mouthpiece for the administration. That's the audience that needs to appreciate this.
And we've never really dealt with any kind of widespread, serious allegation of voter fraud. We look back to Florida in the year 2000, which was a controversy about voting methods and what votes should be counted. And it was so, you know, razor close there. But you may have a situation where the Trump campaign is arguing about stuff that's just, they'll take a state that's got, you know, an apparent landslide for Biden and say, well, we don't know. There's so much fraud here. We'll never know. And then I can imagine Trump declaring some sort of presidential order nullifying the election. I mean, I really believe that he will stop at almost nothing to hang on to power. Nothing about him says that he knows how to lose or admit that he's lost. And I do worry about it. I was sort of poo-pooing, you know, Bill Maher has been out there for a long time saying, oh, he's not going to leave. And I was like, oh, come on. I'm more thinking that Maher may have a point.
Well, I just keep thinking you guys are describing his desires, not the facts, not the eventualities, that'll be his mindset. But the Army or the Secret Service or the Capitol Police or Mitch McConnell or somebody, I think, is going to trump him on this.
I mean, there's the Constitution that says he stops being president at 11:59 on January 21st. So, you know, once that sort of, you know, second hand flips, the question is what happens then if he doesn't sort of get on Marine One?
He's got your Constitution right here.
But then Joe Biden and his people walk into the building, right? I mean, this is how the movie plays out. And then they're both standing there and one won't yield to the other. And then the security guard says, arrest that man. And it's Donald Trump that gets dragged out in that scene, not Joe Biden. You know, it doesn't lend any credence, though, to my confidence is the way the Secretary of State's office in Illinois has handled this. I registered to vote by mail. I sent off my form. I haven't got my ballot yet, but today's the day it's being mailed, so I wouldn't have it yet. But in the meantime, Jesse White, the Secretary of State in Illinois, sends me a thing saying, hey, nobody got your petition to vote by mail, and you need to get that done. And I'm thinking, oh, crap, what? I believe I have done something wrong. And then I get an email saying, no, we shouldn't have sent you that. Our bad. Thumbs up, everybody. And I'm thinking, what the hell, people? What are you guys doing here? And thousands of Illinoisans went through that same experience. So, you know, for me and most of us, we now hopefully understand that that was just a mass mailing that went out from the Secretary of State's office, and they aren't talking to all of these localities. So I should be good to go. But as I sit here, I don't have my ballot, and I'm just mad at them for undermining everybody's confidence. You guys are voting in person, though, right?
I applied for a mail ballot.
Oh, you did! Hooray! Yeah. I think hooray! Like
I'm gonna early vote. I think I'm gonna go. There's a the Nature Center near here has a nice early voting place, and I've voted early there. Usually, only a day or two in advance. I don't really like to vote early because occasionally things will come up that will change your mind at the last minute in the election. But this one, I think the important votes. Pretty set on. So,
well, who are you going to vote for? Because my family usually just takes your last column and we walk into the polling place. Brenda always goes, well, what did Eric say? That's what we do.
Good. I'll send you my palm card.
And that is the concern of some people. They say, well, then here's what they're going to do. They're just like the idea that you would just mail a ballot to everybody that has a social security number in a state. To me, is a good idea. That's essentially what they do in Washington State.
And Oregon and Colorado.
So he's saying, but then they'll just pull all of those from mailboxes and vote illegally. But isn't this the truth that your signature has to appear on the envelope, and that if the signature doesn't match the one on record, then they don't even open that envelope, at least not right away. And as rudimentary as that seems, that sounds to me like that would work. And there's just no historic evidence that even that happens. So I like the idea of 300 million ballots or whatever it would be going out. Do you guys?
I'm fine with it. I think voting by mail is a fine option. And you're right, the evidence that it's susceptible to widespread fraud is almost non-existent. And, you know, anything that gets more people to vote is good by me. And the kind of security measures you're talking about are very common, that they do require signatures. And you're hearing this sort of propaganda like, oh, you can just, you know, have people filling out multiple ballots and mailing them in, or you can, none of it's true. And yet the president keeps talking about it. So
do you worry about ballot harvesting?
No, it was a problem. And I think in one election, where was that? Heather will remember.
North Carolina.
But
it was part of a larger scheme by Republicans in this case to sort of commit voter fraud. So it's not like you got to actually sort of be committed to breaking the law. You can't just, fall into this.
And they got caught for what it's worth. They re-voted in that case. I do think it's, I understand the problem with that. If you think that somebody's going to pull up from the Democratic machine to a senior citizen home and gather everybody's ballots and say, don't worry, we'll drop them off for you, that is a form of ballot harvesting. And maybe that should happen. But I could see how in the wrong hands, that's fraught with peril.
Well, but there is a signature requirement.
Yep.
So,
It looks bad, maybe, to some people, but
evidence that there's ever been a problem. Every election, I get complaints about Ed Burke dropping off donuts at the senior citizen homes where you can vote essentially absentee. And every year he does it because it's part of his, man of the people shtick. And there's nothing illegal about it, but it makes people uncomfortable. So Everything that we're uncomfortable about is ratcheted up like 10,000 times, but there's just no significant evidence that there's ever been any sustained widespread ballot fraud that has tipped an election.
And this is a form of ballot harvesting too, right? I'll drop my wife's off, or I'll drop my family's off.
And in some cases, in some states, that's illegal. You can't do that. Everybody has to bring their own. That's not the law in Illinois, but you got to be very careful about how you do it. And every state's a little bit different, which is why I sometimes blanch at tweets that are like, just vote. You got to follow the rules.
I want to talk to you guys about the Breonna Taylor story. Three charges against the officer that fired at her, not against the others. And murder one is not one of the charges. We'll wait and see what the verdict is. But is that a satisfactory turn of events? What do you think, Heather?
The officer who was charged with wanton endangerment. And this is the officer who shot into this apartment complex from outside in a parking lot through a window that was obscured with blinds. So the bullets fired by that officer went not only into Breonna Taylor's apartment, but also two apartments of her neighbors. And he was actually specifically charged with the bullets that entered the other apartments. And it's there but for the grace that nobody was injured in those apartments.
Okay.
So the charges that he's facing are not related to any of the shots fired at Breonna Taylor or potentially any of the ones that killed her.
Or her boyfriend. Yeah.
I think that is why you're hearing so much anger and frustration. However, the police officers, they returned fire when Breonna Taylor's boyfriend shot at them. Now, he says they didn't announce themselves. They said they did. They didn't have to because it was a no-knock warrant. And so he had a right to defend himself and they had a right to return fire. And that's where you get this sort of result.
Well, I'm glad you're saying that, because the way the story is usually couched is, well, they just fired blindly through the blinds and Breonna Taylor was killed. But the police version of it is that they were returning fire. The New York Times also says that no-knock warrant was rescinded, that in fact they were supposed to announce themselves. I guess that matters, but I'm not sure how much it matters when bullets are flying here. But it usually gets described as they blindly fired through there and killed her. I wasn't there, but it sounds like there was gunfire prior to Breonna getting shot. Do you understand that to be the case?
Yes.
That's definitely the case. And, what happened here was they had a bogus warrant or an unfounded warrant. They were looking for drugs, which were not in the apartment. They were looking for another person who was, I think, Breonna Taylor's former boyfriend.
Yeah.
Who might have been in the apartment. And they were suspecting there was drug trafficking going on there, but the warrant was based on some faulty intelligence. And so they break into the apartment, and there's a dispute as to whether they announced themselves. They say they did. The Attorney General of Kentucky says that there was a witness in the apartment complex who says they did. The New York Times reported that nearly everyone they spoke to in the apartment complex didn't hear anything like that. In any case, they barge in, and the boyfriend of Breonna Taylor thinks that it might be the old boyfriend who the police are actually looking for. So he fires, not knowing who these people are, and he fires at them. And at that point, they have the legal right under Kentucky law to fire back. And they unload. You know, three of them unload their guns. They don't, I think they did they hit him at all, but they didn't, certainly didn't kill him. He's alive.
He was not injured.
He was not injured, but he admits that he fired first. And the Attorney General of Kentucky, who is African-American, but he's also Republican, who spoke at the GOP convention and was also on Donald Trump's short list for Supreme Court justices. I think
he's engaged to Mitch McConnell's granddaughter.
He is. Okay. Well, there you go.
What about all of that?
So anyway, he was in charge of the special investigation. He's the one who said that there was no way to file a criminal charge against these guys, for these police officers, because they were within the law to fire. So in that sense, the law was followed. When the law is followed, justice is done. It doesn't feel right, because Breonna Taylor was a 26-year-old woman and an EMT who was minding her own business asleep in bed with her new boyfriend. And suddenly she gets, you know, they get up and she gets killed in this what is obviously a tragic and horrible and heartbreaking mistake. And it feels really wrong to people that there are no criminal charges applicable, but there really aren't. I mean, the way I read that New York Times story and the way I read everything I've read about this, they didn't have a choice. They did have the wanton endangerment, but that's a pretty minor charge and is probably not going to see anybody put in prison. You know, the idea that this is an outrage, it feels wrong. It feels like an outrage, but legally, I don't think it is.
Brett Hankinson is the detective we're talking about, who was charged. He fired 10 rounds blindly into the apartment. But doesn't it also seem to you like the other two officers did have reason to shoot? It was Hankinson who should not have been firing in there. He could have shot his fellow officers. He could have shot anybody, right? I mean, I get the charges against him. Maybe he will be convicted. Maybe that's the only path.
I think there's a 5-year. Heather, you probably know this. Yeah. What's the maximum?
Yeah, it's like it's 5 years per charge is the maximum. And you know, somebody who's a police officer with no record is not going to get the maximum. That's just not how our justice system works. The
police. I want to suggest that Heather's nickname should be Siri.
But you have to look off mic and go, "Hey, Heather."
What's the penalty for wanton endangerment?
And then you need to do it. You need to go, "The penalty for endangerment is," which is some shtick that we do on the radio with my producer, Elif, because she has that voice down and is very resourceful.
Elif is great. Elif's Siri impersonation is dead on.
People have said to me, "How do you get that so fast?" I go, it's my producer, you know. Just one other point about this, you guys, although it deserves more attention than we'll give it here, but just one other point. The police's incident report, I'm again reading from the Times, contained multiple errors. The police incident report listed Miss Taylor's injuries as none, even though she'd been shot several times, 6 is the latest count, and indicated that officers had not forced their way into the apartment, though they busted the door off the hinges. Boy, we know a little bit about the cops lying on their reports about these things. Eric, Heather, your thoughts about that?
I mean, it's really hard to understand that sequence of events, because we also know that Breonna Taylor was shot and she didn't get any medical attention for at least 20 minutes. And, that I just think is, at least in my personal opinion, is sort of the most horrifying thing to think about. And you think a lot, I think a lot about that tape of, you know, Laquan McDonald being shot and them not helping him. And a lot of the police reform debates we've heard have sort of centered around a duty to help. You know, do the officers, if they hurt somebody, do they have to render medical aid? And a lot of times they don't have to. And, you know, it's just one of those situations where the law seems to just be sort of, you know, unable to address what actually happened.
Well, the Kentucky Attorney General did address that in his remarks yesterday, and he said that her wounds were so bad that she died almost instantly from them.
Within a minute.
And the same thing, I think, is true of Laquan McDonald. I think he was dead before Van Dyke had finished emptying his gun. I mean, they had all the shots. It looks horrible, and it's part of the whole horrible feel of this incident. And I was disappointed in how Pritzker, the tone that J.B. Pritzker and Tony Preckwinkle and Juliana Stratton struck in that news conference yesterday, where they were saying, you know, this is a terrible, grievous miscarriage of justice. And, you know, I don't think they know. I don't think they know the case. They're not in the grand jury. I don't think they've studied that case. And I feel just like it inflames people to be told that this is a terrible miscarriage of justice. And actually, the person who I think struck the in that news conference, the smartest tone was Lori Lightfoot, who just said, "I have a lot of questions here. This raises a lot of questions with me about what happened."
No body camera footage either. No body camera.
Yeah.
Was that the express purpose of that press conference? Because when
it was always in response to the grand jury announcement.
Wow. I know that JB and Lori Lightfoot love the national limelight. They prove it every single time they get an opportunity to not come on our station. I'll never stop bitching about that. But well, I mean, really, they should be a lot more accessible to local media. They're very accessible to national media. And why they want to continue to be national media stars when they've got their own stuff to deal with. I noticed downtown Chicago the next day, yesterday, the cops were out in big force, right? The bicycle battalions and the squad cars, the snow plows were parked at some logical places, getting ready to push back if the protests get out of hand. We were spared that. Louisville was largely spared that too. I suppose you noticed.
Although two officers were shot. I haven't seen the absolute latest on that, whether it was from a protester or was it tangential to a protest. Heather, what happened to Louisville?
They haven't had a conference yet, so we don't really know. We don't really know.
On the Pritzker front, though, Eric wants to make sure that we do our weekly equestrian update. And so I guess I'll segue to that here. On the equestrian front, the governor's daughter is still competing in sports. As other youth in the state are denied the opportunity to compete in theirs. I will also get to the Dreadhead Cowboy in a little bit. But Eric, I'm surprised that you brought this to my attention. I read the article that you suggested I look at, and I don't see the harm here. I don't either.
I was just saying that this is the kind of thing that Pritzker is getting a lot of these days. The accusation is that he's a hypocrite because he lets his daughter Teddy, who's 18, compete in equestrian events,
and he's very good on a national level.
And he doesn't allow young men and women to play football and soccer and other team sports. And I think Pritzker is reasonable about this. I think when you're talking about, say, I mean, I play golf these days. It's a sport, but there's no contact in it except me slapping my forehead.
And high school kids can play golf. There are some high school sports that are up and running.
So basically the argument is, well, she gets to compete. Why can't we compete? And that's just a silly argument. And but it feeds into this larger question as to whether we should be going back into the classroom. And we've seen protests all throughout the suburbs about this, and whether teams should start to play again. You know, the Big Ten has decided it's going to start up again. Notre Dame football had to cancel its game this week against Wake Forest because of COVID-19. I mean, we're still in a very fraught situation, and I feel like people are picking on Pritzker for these little things. And I still think he's doing an okay job, at least on this. So
we don't have Austin here to disagree with everything you just said, so I'll just pause while everybody inserts that at home. Maybe I shouldn't speak for him, but I thought that generally JB has been doing a pretty good job. Although remember, Austin was reminding us. I mean, Austin's view on this has been that while JB has sort of forsaken our economy for the sake of our health, and so while we've been a relatively healthy state, our economy is not, and Wisconsin has been the reverse of that. But the infection rate in Wisconsin is now about 16%. The national average is right now under 5. So it seems like that thing's kind of boomeranged on them, doesn't it?
Which is why they got added back to Chicago's quarantine order, which of course is more of a suggestion / educational tool, since nobody's actually been fined or cited for violating it.
I think that's sort of the attitude the governor should take too about his daughter. That is, I know you get to compete and there's no violation here, you know, but you're going to be a sort of tangential victim here of this.
I mean, there's an argument to be made that the governor's family has to be, you know, has to be Caesar's wife, has to be above reproach. You know, she's 18, right? So she's an adult. And, you know, I really wasn't being told what to do by my parents at 18 either. So, I think we're stretching a bit, but, you know, there's an argument to be said that it was fair game when Lori Lightfoot got her haircut at the height of the pandemic, when none of us could get our hair cut. And she was, you know, criticized for that directly.
And I thought that criticism was decently taken in terms of her posing with her hairdresser and so on. I mean, if you want to discreetly get your hair cut, that's one thing. But she made the mistake of posing for her hairdresser selfie. Can we talk about the other big horse news of the week?
So the head cowboy is this guy that the mayor's office used to promote cooperation with the census taking. And so he's this guy who has been riding a horse around the south and west side of Chicago. He rides a horse around and everybody's been loving it. The other day, he rode it down to Dan Ryan and some city streets on the south side to promote more social services for young people. He said young people's lives matter. And that was the message. And he got a lot of attention when he shut down the Dan Ryan for a while. But he rode that horse for about a half an hour. The horse did not have shoes on the way horses would, and it was bleeding at the hooves. It had saddle sores. When it was eventually taken to animal protection, the horse started to shake. It collapsed. As we sit here right now, it's not sure if they're not going to have to put that horse down. So he's also being charged with animal endangerment. Now I'm mad. You know, isn't that crazy? We don't seem to pay enough attention to the issues affecting little children, but you harm a horse and that gets people's hackles up. I think you can have both thoughts, right? Well, I was kind of charmed by this guy all along. I'm not charmed anymore.
Yeah, I have the same feeling. I enjoyed seeing him when he was down in the Loop during some of the George Floyd protests. It was like a sort of a striking sight. And then when Mayor Lightfoot was using him to promote the census, I thought that seemed kind of a cool attention-getting stunt. But it seemed like something got into his head that he was really an important figure. Yeah. And he was going to, I wasn't even sure what his message was. Like, we are one thing that I think we do as a civic body pay attention to is all the murders of these children. And it's heartbreaking. And we get front page stories out of the murders of these children. And it's horrible. We're very aware of it. And so he's riding down to Dan Ryan to tell us to continue to pay attention to that. I'm not exactly sure what he was doing. And even watching it that day, I was like, this can't be good for the horse. Galloping on concrete like that looked really dangerous. And then to hear afterwards that they may have to put the poor horse down because of this stunt. I mean, it really sours me on the guy. So,
yeah.
And the horse didn't have horseshoes on. And I know precisely that much. I'm holding my fingers about an inch apart about horses because I am a city girl through and through. And even I know that that's got to be incredibly painful for the horse. And even if you watch the video, there are definitely times where you can see that the horse is, you know, sort of slowing down and being urged to go faster. It's just sad. You know what I mean? However, I will say that one of my longest standing pet peeves about being a reporter is the outrage that greets any sort of harm or threat posed to an animal, as opposed to the outrage when people are being killed. And, you know, I've seen it time and again in my career that it's just, it's disproportionate. And there are certainly people who are far more outraged about the condition of the horse than who were ever worried about, you know, kids being shot to death on the South and the West sides.
But like I said a moment ago, you get to have both thoughts, right? Like, sure. They don't have to intersect. If you just said, talk to me about how you feel about harm to animals who are innocent and unable to comprehend, you could have 100% sadness about that, right? It's, what is it, not a zero-sum game? Hey, by the way.
Yeah, I just think that so many times when people are injured, we somehow look for reasons to explain why it's their fault and why I have made different decisions so I am not at the risk that they put themselves in. Like, we sort of instinctually sort of seek a way to sort of say, well, I don't need to worry about that because I don't do X, Y, or Z. And I think that can't really happen with a horse or an animal because we instinctively understand that they don't have that capacity.
Yeah.
Why people make that argument about kids and parents and people, I've never quite understood.
Incidentally, I was gone last week. And Eric did, I understand, a pretty good job, although his wife doesn't think so, which is the really funny thing about it. But Eric's still wearing his Michigan T-shirt. We were in Michigan. We went all the way up past Traverse City to Charlevoix and Petoskey up there. Lovely, lovely part of the country. Lovely drive. We went up to Milwaukee, took the ferry over to Muskegon, drove up, and then on the way back just drove all the way down the east side of Lake Michigan back to Chicago. Anyway, as we were doing so, we were sort of counting the Trump versus Biden signs. I'm asking you guys if you have any sort of small anecdotal observations about the way this thing is tipping, either from what you're reading or have been seeing. But we were counting more Biden signs in the very far northern part of the state and in the southwestern part of the state. In the middle part of the state, it seemed to be more Trump. But my wife suggested that when Hillary was running, I'll bet you did not see as many Hillary signs as you are seeing Biden signs. Is that as though maybe the distinction would tell you something about Trump's strength in Michigan this year relative to 2016? So I will just offer that as an interesting sort of anecdote about my insight into where Michigan is leaning. It might be even closer than it was last time. Maybe it goes the other way.
Polls show that Michigan isn't close and that Biden has a pretty significant outside the margin of error lead in Michigan. And I think if you combine that with the fact that the Trump campaign has basically stopped advertising on television in Michigan, I think that probably tells you the state of the race, at least at this moment on September 24th.
Yeah, and your driving route was not exactly through the population centers of Michigan. You may have at Grand Rapids doing that, but just about everywhere else is fairly rural. That, you know, Detroit, Ann Arbor, Lansing, and those bigger cities, Flint, are not on your not on your route. So
no, but Detroit is not on Trump's page either, though, right?
Oh, I'm certain it's not. But
the other thing is the signs are bigger for Trump. Have you guys noticed this? And we just don't have that many signs in Chicago, it seems to me. But a Donald Trump sign is half the yard. It's a flag. It's a big old banner. The Biden signs are just little yard signs, which have the same vote as a big sign. But it seems like the Trump signs are yelling and the Biden signs are just popping up from the grass.
Well, isn't that one thing that people are worried about, Democrats are worried about, is that the Trump backers are more enthusiastic than Biden backers. Like, if you ask people, you call them up, you say, who are you going to vote for? You're going to get a lot more support for Biden. But if you try to register the passion, the enthusiasm for the candidate, Trump's supporters tend to be more enthusiastic. So
that's why I think those boat parades are brilliant.
Even when the boats sink?
Even when the boats sink, because mostly they don't.
Mostly they don't, right.
And the aerial shot of 500 boats, which could represent 500 voters, not a lot, right? But it looks massive. It looks like a Navy, you know? So I haven't seen a Biden flotilla armada. Have you guys? No.
No, and you haven't. Also, when Biden gives speeches, you don't get the turnout. Obviously, he's not doing the kind of rallies that Trump is doing. It would be very off-brand for Biden to do that. But there just isn't that. I don't think there's not that interest in seeing Biden. He's not as unpredictable. He's not as charismatic as Trump, let's face it. And
I would just jump in to say yard signs don't vote, boat signs don't vote. And the people who own boats are demographically Trump's strongest demographic. So if, you know, so that I don't think necessarily changes the state of play. And I would argue that a Trump rally, you go to a Trump rally, not necessarily to see Donald Trump, but to be among people who you agree with, and that it's sort of an act of community. It's like going to a Pearl Jam concert or a, you know, Grateful Dead concert. It's an act of formally joining a community that doesn't necessarily translate to Biden, because he's a more traditional political candidate. Right.
I like it more to you want to go see Babe Ruth play or Michael Jordan play. I mean, it is this sort of, you know, love him or hate him, it's this amazing star who's not going to be in that position forever. And people want to say, I saw one of those things. A friend of my parents drove up to Milwaukee when Trump was up there several months ago. He's probably going to vote for him, but he's not a crazy Trump supporter, but he just wanted to see what that thing was. So he was one of those people up there. And to your point, Heather, I do think people like to be on or root for winning teams. And if it looks like, because of the size of the sign or the rally or the armada, that that's a winning team, I do think that has an effect. I know it's one vote per boat, but you see my point, right? That it does probably, in fact, either encourage the base or maybe even expand the base, because people like to be on winning teams.
There's got to be some sort of study somewhere about yard signs and whether they're effective or whether they...
And they are not. Any campaign person will tell
Heather,
you...
Heather, what is the effect of...
Do not talk to me about yard signs. The only reason you do yard signs is so that the candidate, when they're driving from home to work, sees a bunch of yard signs and they feel like they're getting their money's worth. That's the old yard sign cliche. But you know what's interesting is that everybody's been worried that there's a whole, or not worried or concerned, or just that the polls are missing a whole bunch of shy Trump voters, that there are people who are planning to vote for Trump but don't feel sort of comfortable telling pollsters. And that sort of is diametrically opposed with this, I want the biggest Trump sign possible sort of notion of belonging to the sort of the Trump base. So I don't know how to reconcile those two. They seem very, you know.
We did not see those shy Trump voters in 2016. Remember, that was a theory before that election was, well, Trump is rude and crude, and I'm not going to tell a pollster I'm going to vote for him, but I actually will. But in fact, the polls, you know, everyone talks about how the polls got it wrong in 2016. And essentially, the national polls were very, very close to the.
Right. So
it was only a few state polls where they screwed up, and it was like, and they didn't screw up by that much, because the states were close. Right. But to get to the point of enthusiasm, what I was talking about before, I think that one of the things that is really going to galvanize the Democrats is this whole fight over the Supreme Court. And the Democrats are making it about health care, and they're making it about abortion rights, and they're making it about fairness and hypocrisy. And even though historically Democrats have not gotten excited about the Supreme Court, I think this year might be different.
Well, that's interesting, because that would be a turnabout, Eric. That is not the way that usually shakes out. Republicans tend to be very galvanized around justices, Supreme Court justices, and sometimes the single issues that those justices will vote on, like abortion. Democrats don't turn out at the polls for those issues, historically, right?
That's historically right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think this year it's all different. I think, and part of it is that the Republicans are going to get their sixth justice. It looks pretty sure that Trump's nominee, who he's going to announce on Saturday, will glide through the Senate and be approved in time for the election. And so at that point, your motivation, you've got your justices on the Supreme Court, so you're feeling like, I've got to go out and vote for him. I think Trump did get some voters last time, people who wanted to make sure that the Antonin Scalia seat got filled by a Republican. So they went and voted for Trump, even though they were kind of a little bit holding their nose over him, because they really wanted him to appoint the successor to Scalia and not Obama.
Yeah.
Once Ruth Bader Ginsburg's successor is seated, I don't know that that really excites the Republicans that much anymore. I mean, they'll have their six votes.
Is the big sin here not how this is being handled, RBG's replacement, but really how Merrick Garland was handled, right? I mean, Donald Trump is the sitting president. none of us likes the velocity here. It looks reckless, but the Senate could approve Donald Trump's appointee. It's more what happened to Merrick Garland that should concern us, not what's happening now. Would you agree with that, Eric?
Yeah, totally. If the situation were totally reversed, all the parties were reversed, I'd be furious if the Democrats weren't trying to get their justice. I would because I would have hoped that if all the situation was reversed, that we wouldn't have done that. The Democrats wouldn't have done that in 2016. I think what happened to Merrick Garland was grotesque. I thought that they should have allowed Obama to fill that seat, or at least give Garland a hearing and a vote, and they didn't in 2016. And so they've just completely reversed themselves this year. And to me, the offense was 2016. What Trump is doing now, he's got the Constitution tells him to appoint Supreme Court justices. It tells the Senate to advise and consent. We don't have a partial president up until January 21st, right? He is the president of the United States. There's no dimmer switch on that power. And so he should exercise it. And I don't like that he's going to do it, but I think he has every right to.
I was just going to mention that there is video of Amy Coney Barrett, who everybody expects to be Trump's pick, playing pundit on some of the news shows in the wake of Merrick Garland's stalled nomination, saying that no way should Obama appoint somebody that's so close to the election. It would be a tragedy of democracy, and that it should absolutely not be allowed to happen. And I think it is a good reminder to think very carefully when speaking into a recording device.
Well, it does show a lack of confidence, doesn't it, in a way, on the Republicans' part and the senators for that matter? I mean, shoot, if they were all going to get reelected and Donald Trump was going to win, then what would the rush be? I wondered why he doesn't hold out the appointment until after the election so as to bait the base and anybody else that wants a conservative on the court to vote for him, because Biden's not going to give you a conservative. So
yeah, I think you're right about that, John. I think that would sell more tickets for Trump. But
oh, by the way, one last thing for you guys, just to opine on pumpkin spice mac and cheese is coming out. Kraft Heinz will introduce it in Canada. Pumpkin spice mac and cheese. Heather, do you want some of that?
I will decline.
Zorn, go.
I will the hard pass on that, but I also put it, there is no pumpkin in pumpkin spice. Did you know that?
No. Yep.
It's all spice.
You're kidding.
Nope.
No.
Well, this is a fraud and a hoax. And
Fake news.
Cut it. That's just how much 2020 sucks. You can't even believe in pumpkin spice this year. Okay. That's all I got for you guys. Anything else from you?
No, I'm just, I'm really glad that we're going to be on iTunes again. That's really wonderful.
Yeah, hopefully you are listening to this on your device on iTunes. If not, go to WGNradio.com. And if you get a chance, send me an email saying, hey, have you got it fixed yet, the way Eric does every single day for the last 5 weeks. And then I go, Eric, no, it's not fixed yet. People I don't know and never will see tell me they're working on it. And that's all I've got. It's been so frustrating.
Your nightmare is over, John.
This week. And thank you, Heather. Thank you, Eric. We're produced by Ella Garris. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com.